for this evening, live from Studio 76 in Valrigo, Florida, Derek Old School Fournier.
So I give zero f-
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. This is, in fact, Derek Old School Fournier coming to you live from Valrico, Florida. It's been a long time. God, I got back here to set things up, and it is absolutely astonishing how little I remember about doing any of this stuff. So welcome back to the broadcast. I'm glad that when we got back to this, you guys were still here with us. I'm going to adjust my levels a little bit, hopefully give you guys a little bit more volume, though you guys are usually telling me if you don't have enough volume out there. So I'll just assume that you guys will tell me if you can't hear me. This is What the Buck. We are going to be talking about Buccaneers football. Despite my desire to never discuss this kind of shit, apparently we're going to have to talk about draft because that's really all we have left to talk about. That's not really true. There's a bunch of things we could talk about. We got a couple of topics for tonight, but most of them are speculative in nature, and that's what people seem to want to do a lot of lately. So that's what we'll do. You know, we don't typically cater is probably the right word, to the demands of the masses. And that's because, well, the masses just don't give a fuck about us, to be honest. But that's probably, there's a chicken and egg thing there somewhere, if I were to dig into it. You guys have heard me rail against supporting the public narrative, and I will continue to do so because I find it to be the lowest common denominator around what I'm calling journalists nowadays. But we have to discuss some of the things that are top of mind when it comes to Bucs fans. And some of those things are, who the hell is going to be the offensive coordinator? Does the offensive coordinator have any power in this organization? And that brings into discussion a lot of sort of conjecture and speculation about what kind of a tight ship Lovie Smith runs, whether or not he is the one who's holding everything back. I saw another article about whether or not he wants a Mike Shula kind of offensive coordinator, sort of another hearkening back to the days of Dungy. And there's a really good article, actually, I think. I can't remember who wrote it. I was reading this evening for the prep, and how Mike Shula has evolved over time. And that does happen over time. It usually doesn't happen year on year, which, because we watched Mike Shula suck here for years, and we've watched many guys actually suck here. But in coaching in the NFL, it would appear, and we're going to do our housekeeping, and we're going to talk about some really cool things that are going on in the community. We're going to talk about a really great event that's coming up May 1st that you guys need to save the date for. But I kind of launched right into this. In this amazingly incestuous world that is the coaching carousel, in which you can continue to coach even if you completely suck C. Marty Morningwig for like 30 fucking years, you have the opportunity over time to build a track record, even if you started out really, really sucking. And what is interesting about this, as I continue to do what I hate, which is say someone just sucks, Marty Morningwig, if he hopped on the whiteboard in my office in the other room, I got a 4x8 whiteboard that I use for other work stuff that I should actually broadcast from occasionally if we're going to do whiteboard stuff. It's kind of fun. Would probably whiteboard his ass off. Probably has forgotten more about football than I will ever know. Absolutely. I would be willing to bet that that's true. I have not seen him be particularly effective in any role. Now, I can't say that with 100% certainty. It's anecdotal for me. And when you guys hear me talk about opinions and backing them with data, I'm doing in this case exactly what I accuse you guys of. My gut instinct, and no fat jokes here, is that I don't like Marty Morningwig as a coach. I certainly don't like him as a coordinator. But I haven't studied him, right? And the reality is as well that most people don't have the time to study him. I was looking up some stuff because I know how I evaluate quarterbacks. I know how I've evaluated guys that I've coached. I know that you guys don't care about some of that stuff because I've talked to you about quarterback talent and skills, and it doesn't seem to matter what my background is or what I'm trying to tell you guys sometimes. And I mean you guys specifically. I'm not trying to beat you guys up necessarily. There's a group of people that listen to this show who I think listen but don't hear sometimes about some particular aspects of the game or of players. And that's okay, I suppose. But I will assure you that a lot of the times when I'm talking about this stuff, it's not out of my ass. Bucks Realist, Wikipedia what? I'm not sure what Wikipedia you're referring to or why you're referring to Wikipedia. So if you let me know, I will address the three question marks. At any rate, I was reading a bunch of stuff on scouting, and it was from five or six different websites talking about what different scouts look at. And they all sort of look at some of the same things. Sometimes they prioritize them in different orders. I think I actually saved one of them I thought was great because Bill Parcells is pretty well regarded for for the way he had gone after Quacks in the past. I hope I saved that article. God dang it, I don't think I did. Anyway, he had four criterion that he used regularly. Now, this was from a day gone by. He wanted someone who graduated, because he wants to see someone finish where they start, a four-year starter. He wanted them to have at least 23 wins in those 4 years. I can't remember the fourth one. But that sort of stuff has sort of gone away a little bit with the way guys are coming out early. Anyway, we'll jump into quarterback. We'll jump into offensive coordinator. We'll jump into free agency, another hot topic, right? The free agents that we should keep, the ones that we think may be going away, ones that may be out there to pick up. The speculation about trading out of the draft pick is going to be really tough, man, because that is just complete conjecture to try and guess what someone might do, would do, could do. Chip Kelly is now the supreme poobah of football in Philadelphia, and I know that a lot of us have thought maybe he would go and try and scoop up this pick and give us everything, including the farm. But that kind of stuff becomes very Madden-esque. I think that at this point we'll just assume that the Buccaneers are going to have the first overall pick. And with the announcement today that Jameis is going to go out, we have to discuss which of the two quarterbacks are going to take, if they're going to take any, and go from there. So let's do some house cleaning. Fish, I see you said that the website crashed. I'm not sure which one. Hopefully it wasn't ours. But hopefully everyone else is okay. I see that everyone's still in the chat room, which is good. But I want to thank our outgoing sponsors this year. So with What the Buck, our season is over. It will officially end once the Super Bowl is complete, and we will be going back to re-engage our sponsors. And they have been amazing sponsors for us this year, and you guys have heard us talk about them. We don't whore out a lot, but these guys we whore out to because, by God, they keep us able to do the things we do in the charity world and able to run the tailgate that we run that you guys have been able to participate in, et cetera. So it's really an amazing opportunity for us to have guys like this who've stood by us, especially given the fact that we run a podcast out of my poker room. No one knows who the hell we are. We essentially thumb our nose at everyone. And keep at arm's distance at the very closest with most official outlets. So the fact that Wing House of Tampa stood by us now for multiple years and hopefully will be with us for many years to come is awesome. So to Tony and Eric and Aaron and all the girls over there, thank you so much for the support. Crawford as well, for supporting us. We're hoping to build that relationship even deeper. Steakhouse Elite, our friends from the Pacific Northwest, and you guys may be getting more and more familiar with the Pacific Northwest with Marcus Mariota, seemingly the lead dog in the clubhouse right now for the Buccaneers. Their Kobe Crafted Beef, if you haven't had it yet, you haven't gotten in line quick enough at our tailgates or you haven't gone to Publix, it's awesome. You can get it at Publix. Make sure you do. We love those guys. We love what they do, and we love that they care about us enough so that we were their only advertising outside of their national stuff that they do. We were their only regional and certainly their only football or sports-related advertising. Elder Ford of Tampa. This relationship just keeps getting deeper and deeper. I dropped my truck off over there for some service today. Terrell Hopkins and the whole crew over there have been amazing, and we're expecting to continue to drive that one home as well. AFD Limited came in and helped us with our liquor. That's one of my projects I work on with Gore Samuel and his father, Ricky. Ronnie Gent, Oren Thompson, Darren McBride, Byron Chamberlain, trying to bring American football training to the rest of the world, where it is played actively and avidly and generally poorly. But it's a lot of fun and kind of a neat opportunity to get to meet a lot of cool people. So thanks to the AFD Limited team for doing that. And last but not least, thanks to the crew of Blackbeard's Revenge, our sister crew, in more ways than I care to admit. It is amazing what they do with us. To have another group of people that are so focused on the community is awesome. It's nothing short of amazing that we can keep 200 people interacting and have as few skirmishes as we do. But everyone is human, and hopefully we can continue to build on this relationship and do the great things that we've done in the community together and individually as well. So, and last but not least, you guys. So you guys have heard me talk about it before. I think at last count, we're at 41 different countries clocking in. I don't know what our views are. Actually, I haven't tracked them in a year and a half, but I certainly could. I know that we are listened to by far more people than should listen to us in some ways with the production value that I've been able to do the last year. But I certainly am humbled by the fact that any of you give a shit what I think. So, with that all being said, a couple of other notes. We do have limited quantities of our What the Buck t-shirts left. I don't feel like mailing them. So please make friends with someone else who will mail them. If you can do that, use Twitter, use Facebook, whatever. We've got them. They're minimum donation of $10. You have to pay for shipping and handling to whoever is crazy enough to ship them to you. But we certainly love seeing the What the Buck logo out there. We've got some reds, some oranges. I think that's it on the shirts. Upcoming events. We have an end-of-the-year banquet coming up if you're local and you'd like to attend. As we do that, I'll let you know what it's going to be, but we're going to have some end-of-the-year awards. That's also a chance to become a member of the crew here and be up for amazing opportunities to help set things up, tear things down, clean things up, work your ass off, do amazing things in the community, get phone calls at all hours of the day and night, probably be yelled at because you forgot to do something at some point or another, but have a fraternal organization, and I don't know if fraternal is fair because it's actually dual-gendered, that, to be honest, is pretty damn impressive. We need help, and we've been able to get help. Our crew of 31 is a group of amazing people, and we're going to be recognizing them at the bank. And we have some people moving into what's called the defensive line, which are the people that we can call at 2 o'clock in the morning who will answer the phone. And to those people especially, I say a hearty thank you, and let's look forward to another great year. Save the date, May 1st. If you are a golfer, or if you have a business or know a business that may be interested in supporting a huge golf event, May 1st is going to be the date for our first annual, and I'll throw annual in there just to scare the hell out of everybody, golf event. This will be our 10th season for What the Buck. And we're going to do our first golf event. We are doing it in conjunction with the crew of Blackbeard's Revenge. It will be at the course at MacDill Air Force Base, which you normally have to know somebody to get on. The cost and the sponsorship packages will become available over the next couple of weeks. We will have online sign up. We are going to be planning to do some pretty impressive things. The charity that will be benefiting, which means all the net proceeds are going to go to, and you guys have heard of these guys before, you know that if there's a charity that we are close to, if there's a charity that touches our heart, it is the One Voice Foundation, which is a foundation here that supports not just the patients of pediatric cancer treatment, but the families of the patients of, and their efforts and hearts and blood, sweat, and tears go towards supporting those families, and that's what we're going to be doing. So May 1st is the date. If you're interested, do let us know. We've got a Save the Date event on Facebook. We're trying to get all 36 foursomes filled up. I'll have the numbers out there for you, like I said, in the next couple of weeks, as well as what you get for registering, and there'll be some events around there as well. You're going to be seeing and hearing a lot about this in the coming weeks, and we'd love to see you guys out there at that event. All right. We wrapped up a great year of giving. The support from you guys and the sponsors is what made it. So we're hoping to set up to kick that off again on May 1st. We're going to be doing it throughout the year. If you have any questions or want to be participatory in any of that, get out there and like our What the Buck Facebook page and interact, and we can let you know. All right. We are going to have Mark Cook calling in at 9:30 from PewterReport.com. He was not able to come into the studio tonight due to some personal obligations. When we do that, I think we'll probably focus our Jameis Winston conversation when he's in, because you guys know he's a Florida State guy. Some of you may think he's a homer, but he certainly has a lot of knowledge about Jameis Winston that I'd like to tap into, as well as being, you know, the editor-in-chief of PewterReport.com. He may have some interesting insight as to what the Bucks are looking at with regards to Marcus Mariota, et cetera. But when I look at the big questions, concerns, and in order, I think coordinator is the first thing I want to discuss. Now, when it comes to the coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the offensive coordinator, anyway, it's not just a coordinator as in generic. We've had a number of interviews coming through here. We've had a number of pieces of speculation. When Chip Kelly was making his power play, there was just a frenzied activity on Twitter about how maybe Chip Kelly would come down here and be offensive coordinator, which I still don't understand how that got legs. There was actually a pretty good summary article that I think actually was from Pew Report. It got chopped off when I printed it. No, it was TampaBay.com, which listed the top names, Chudzinski, Ketter, and I don't know if I'm saying his name right. If someone knows the phonetics on that, it may be Cater. It's Koetter. It's the cat from Atlanta. Marty Morningwig, Greg Roman, and Mark Trestman. Now, I know that people got their panties on a wad because Trestman and McCown were on the beach and the families are hanging out, and there was a whole tailspin about what this could mean with McCown and all of this sort of stuff. I'm not quite sure why that was going on. But it does look Cutter. That's the phonetic. Thank you, Chris. I know that when Chudzinski was available before, this was one of those up-and-coming gurus-to-be out of Carolina. He'd done a great job with Cam Newton. He showed some flexibility. And one of the things that people talk about with him, and they don't emphasize enough, Fish is saying Cutter is going to be the OC. Fish, do you have any inside information, or are you just doing that thing that people do on the internet where they just say something as if it's a fact, hoping then, in fact, to make it a fact? I'm not sure what that was. I'm going to wait for his answer, even though there's a delay, because I want to know. I haven't seen anything about a hiring yet, but and I thought there was an article that he had been offered. Oh, he's got sources. Okay. It's almost like talking to Dumig. So, at any rate, Chudzinski, Cutter, Trestman, Morningwig. The only one in that whole list that I actually don't want is Morningwig, and that was my whole diatribe at the beginning. Greg Roman was another one. That was interesting. I know he's not hired. I'm being an asshole to you, Fish. And Fish, before 9:30, if you want to call in and stop taking shit from me in the chat room, you're welcome to do so. Why? We know fire people. Oh, Calico's asking a good question. You don't have to be quiet, Fish. I'm happy for you to talk, man. It's just I didn't know if you were doing the internet tough guy thing. X, Y, and Z will be the case. Thus has been said. Period. Point blank. Facts are. You know, that sort of shit. Calico asked a good question. Why haven't we fired anybody? And I haven't seen any notices about someone getting fired. I haven't seen Marcus Arroyo packing his shit. A lot of speculation came out around the Senior Bowl when we, sort of recused ourselves of the opportunity that there's because there's going to be some staff moves here. And I understand about how people are still under contracts. Keep them in play. Keep them until you replace them. I don't know. There's some guys that I think you can just get rid of. You know they're not going to be here. You're not going to go into next season with Marcus Arroyo as the offensive coordinator. There's no fucking way that was going to happen. Absolutely no way that was going to happen. And that's not because he's a bad guy. Again, I want to make sure I throw out the disclaimer that we try and use. But I can't imagine a scenario in which that would be the case. So, anyway, whoever it is, they've got some really good, on paper anyway, guys, right? I mean, Chudzinski didn't do great as a head coach. There's a lot of guys with ties to the NFC South, Chudzinski included, Cutter included, who know those players and the style. The thing that doesn't get enough focus, and TampaBay.com actually did point it out, was that Chudzinski had the experience of taking a guy who had run spread and transitioning him to a less spread-like offense. And we will talk about spread offense, by the way. With Pioli hired in Atlanta, I think it makes sense for McDaniels to be the hire, hence Ketter will be released. Okay, so you're just putting together puzzle pieces, which is cool. He said he's going to play baseball in the Rose Bowl. Okay, that's fine. Just reading the chat room to figure out what you guys are talking about. Roman would have been an interesting call with what's going on with Harbaugh. And Tressman, Tressman had some interesting stuff going on as well. The tie to McCown is interesting. The tie to Lovey is interesting. Do I think we can do badly? I think any one of these guys, including Marnie Morningwig, would be an improvement over what we had this year, if for nothing other than the experience and ability to build a game plan. Now, again, I don't really like Morningwig, and I hate to keep beating on him. And I'm not trying to beat on Arroyo. It's an experience issue. But I think bringing in some stability to the offensive side of the house is important. And any one of these guys will do that. Any one of them. Now, the position that no one's talking about yet, because I think it is premature, is who the hell is going to rebuild this offensive line, because these guys were just absolutely terrible. And I've told you before, I don't think it's because they don't have the ability to play the game, which means it's got to go on the coach, and that absolutely floors me. What is this me doing in Atlanta, making coffee for everyone? Hey, making coffee in big contracts. Jimmy Johnson surprises, no mention of Bill Callahan. There wasn't in that article. I know Bill Callahan's a name that comes up a lot. The only West Coast guy actually was Marty that was mentioned. But when it comes to draft, this is one of those things that we talk about quite regularly. And I think most of the guys that we talk to get it. But the idea of determining who it was you're going to draft before you have an offensive coordinator is kind of crazy. And especially with the two options that we have. And I'm going to frame any of our draft discussion under the concept that even I rile against, but I acknowledge must be. By the way, Fisha, it's a very funny comment about the parallel between what Bruce Allen will be doing in Washington and what Rich McKay's doing in Atlanta. That we are going to pick either Marcus Mariota or we're going to pick Jameis Winston. Right? That whether it be because that is, in fact, our need, whether it be because that is the right thing to do, whether it be because if we don't do that, there will be outcry of biblical proportion in the Tampa Bay area, whether it is any of those things or some combination of those three or others, that will be what is done. If that is the case, those two quarterbacks, in my opinion, are so different, so drastically different, that you're making a decision that doesn't last for a year. It lasts for 3-5-ish. Something like that. You're going to retool your team to make that work. We need to commit to a QB and coaching staff for at least 3 years. There we go, Rick. Rick, you're absolutely right. Big lead. Todd Haley feared that his phones were bugged. Jesus Christ. Drew Hamilton, don't get me going down the Todd Haley craziness in the Chiefs. So that's astonishing. So the offensive coordinator job has got to be done. Now it'd be good we don't have an offense to build on. So, Raul, good to have you in the chat room. I don't recognize your name, but it's good to have you. And we got a couple of names that I don't recognize, which is great. We got some regular ones. Not sure why Bucks Princess's chat roll won't auto-scroll. I apologize about that, but since I didn't write chat roll, I can't fix it. But one thing I want to also dispel the myth of is that our entire offense is a big steaming pile of shit. Let's go through some myths. And you guys feel free to throw some in the chat room that we can talk about as well. Or things that you assert, and we can see whether we think they're real or make-believe, right? Look at the skill positions past quarterback, because I don't want to have to talk about Glennon and McCown, because that talk is just so old, it's of no use. It's going to get us nowhere. Let's just argue that quarterback are gone. Offensive line as a whole, it's not like every one of these guys has to be replaced. Many of these actually know how to play the game, but as a unit, they played like dog shit. In the system that we were forced to run because of scheme or decisions or choices or whatever, they were terrible. Absolutely terrible. The one time we ran predominantly man blocking, they played pretty well. Now, does that mean we're going to go to a man scheme next year? I don't know. It certainly anecdotally looks like that'd be a good idea given what the fuck they were able to do here. But I know I've been able to coach guys to play both. I don't know why it was so hard. Not sure why Mike despises Lovie. This is another thing that's amazing is people that despise Lovie. That one really is flooring me a little bit. But we can talk about that one next. But skill positions... Buck Realist in the chat room says one of the myths is if your receivers are tall, you just throw it up. It is a misnomer. That said, when you have physical advantages, you should take advantage of them. This is one of those things that Gruden probably did to his detriment in some ways. He would try and scheme his way into the mismatch that he saw. Maybe it was speed, maybe it was size. I think successful offensive coordinators understand these situations and situationally take full advantage of them. And I, you know, when we played Chicago in Chicago, you guys saw me diagram up a play. It was a touchdown play to Mike Evans. When you have a guy like him who's so tall and can go get the ball at the high point, he high points the ball real well. The fact that we are so bad in the red zone is absolutely beyond me. Absolutely beyond me. And when you see other teams get in the red zone and see situationally, if your cornerback, depending on the position he takes in front of that receiver, right, whether he's inside, head up, or outside, you can make some determinations. You can use spacing. When Chip Kelly's offense, when you're talking about that, you're talking about spacing. Spacing is very, very interesting. With spacing, you can create those mismatches. Right now, one of the things you guys, if you've listened to the show for any period of time, know that I hate is when you play a team that plays a 3-4 defense and tends to sort of amoeba muddle their linebackers around the line of scrimmage so that the quarterback is it's tough for the quarterback in the center to make their reads on who the rushers are going to be. I hate tight bunch against that formation. And Jimmy Johnson, I'd love to know your opinion on this, by the way. I hate tight bunch there because tight bunch allows them to stand near the fucking quarterback. I can't determine who's covering and who's not because they can fall off or come to the quarterback and trade off easily. It doesn't make them do what I call declare. And I didn't coin that term. It's a term that's used all the time. If I use a doubles config, any of a number of configs, or I can use bunch, but just get them the fuck away from the end of the line, they can't just have their linebackers milling about. Mike says, give Glennon a chance next year. We don't need a quarterback. All due respect, I think you're crazy. I think we've seen plenty of what Glennon can offer. Now, if you put Glennon behind a great offensive line, allow him to be a pocket passer, maybe he's going to be successful. I think Glennon will make a tremendous backup quarterback in New England, San Diego, any of a number of places. But I don't think either quarterback here is going to get a really fair shake from the fans, whether it's Glennon or McCown, because everyone's timed out on both of them. Now, do I care about a fair shake in the fans? No. Like I said, there was a Facebook thread the other day where someone said if the Bucks don't draft a quarterback first, the fans are going to riot. I said, let them riot. Because you don't draft or scheme because of what fans say, and you don't draft or scheme because of what some fat guy with a blog or a podcast says. No, you don't do any of that, right? Even when the fans or I am right, you just You just don't do it, right? These guys actually do know what the hell they're doing. As much as sometimes I say that they're fucking stupid, they are usually pretty bright, and there's a lot more complexity to what we're talking about. Fish is trying to bait Skip into a discussion about Michael Johnson, and Skip was absolutely early on that one. I know we need a quarterback. We need a lot. Free agency rarely works. Those guys were allowed to leave for a reason. Trade down. Okay, Rick Hughes. Guys were allowed to leave for a reason, and Skip, I think the phrase you used on Facebook the other day was dumpster diving, and someone used the phrase other people's trash. I want to dispel of this myth, this rumor, in my opinion, this bullshit. They weren't all released because they suck. This is something for 9 fucking seasons I have tried to explain to people, and I don't understand why this is so hard for you guys to understand. And again, I'm not attacking you guys in the chat room. I'm attacking people, the other 4,000 that listen to this podcast. It is not about just your ability to play the game. It's not about your ability to run in a straight line, to block, to tackle. It's not just about those things. It's about those things. It's about the scheme. It's about the opportunity. It's about a million variables. It is not simple, guys. It isn't as simple as if you get cut, you're no good. It doesn't work that way. We have so many examples just on this team where it isn't that way. Raul says, the thing is with the O-line, we can get decent, not elite players because our current O-line are below decent, except for Dotson. You know, it's funny. EDS, Collins for that matter, both rated very well when we brought him in here, and they played like dog shit here. Logan Mankins, according to Pro Football Focus, improved his behavior, his play over the last 5 games of the season. In fact, ranked very highly across guards, played horribly at the beginning of the season. The interesting thing about offensive line evaluation is you can't really evaluate them as individuals because they're working together. And when someone blows their assignment, it's almost impossible unless you go back and watch all the All-22 and grade them yourselves and you know what their responsibilities were to know who fucked up. Because it could very well have been the case that a center was supposed to pass to the guard or a tackle was supposed to pass to the guard or the other way around, and they didn't, and it made one of the guys look like shit. It's really tough. The only tricky bit is you can absolutely say Gilkey's no good. Absolutely true. And Jimmy, I didn't mean to attack you. And I wasn't trying to attack anyone in the room. That's why I keep saying it. Here's mea culpa. Before Mark calls in, I want to make sure I get this all out in the open. I have dreaded doing another show. This season and last season has taken the joy of watching football and certainly the joy of covering football in any sort of analytical portion, perspective from what we do here. Every single time we cover things and we try and go to film, we try and use data, and it doesn't sink in, or we have the same hashed out conversations, or people have the same arguments. It's enraging. It's really, really, really tough. I do this because you guys seem to give a shit about it, and that matters, right? So when I get fired up, it's not at you guys individually. I'm humble that you guys give a shit to tune in the middle of your busy lives and spend time listening to this, whether it's listening live or listening on the Audubon like my man Peter does. But it is absolutely a challenge to go through some of this. But that's the enough of that. Try charting the games of this season. Yeah, I'm sure. And Mike, to say McCown is bad, real bad, just says you don't know how the fuck to evaluate a quarterback. And that was an attack in some ways. I do know how to evaluate a quarterback. Were his results good? No. If you'd like to go sit down and look at all 22 footage and go through every one of the games the way I do, then we can absolutely... You'll take Tebow over McCown. There you go. That's all I needed to hear. There you go. Good luck. That's just fucking asinine. Take Ken Dorsey, too, I'm sure. Anyway... Stocker is a good blocker. He's actually got good hands. He's just slow because of all the injuries. He's the best all-around tight end on the team. Fish, I told you that in training camp. It was still true at the end of the year. The problem is he's made of fucking tissue paper. ASJ, I don't know what he did to his back, but you could see the drop-off. He couldn't block at the beginning. He couldn't block at the end. He's tall. It's going to require someone who can coach him on how to block, how to keep his pad level low, and how to take advantage of his size. The other guys were all just half-asses, right? Brandon Myers, all the others, Mark right there. We'll get Mark in here. Mark Cook, how are you, sir?
Hello.
Mark, you did your test? Did they kick you in the nuts in your test?
Well, I had an operation done, so this is the new ginger badass.
The new ginger badass. Wow, you are absolutely disturbing when you try and pretend to be a woman. I'm not going to lie to you.
I was emasculated on our message boards by people who hate Jameis Winston.
Well, welcome to the broadcast, Mark Cook, and congratulations that you managed to pass a test. Not something that you're used to doing, I'm sure.
Well, I can pass a medical test. Written, math, reasoning, comprehension, no, I cannot pass those tests. But I was able to get through the heart stress test today. I tell you what, for somebody who's out of shape, like, and you wonder why I don't walk to your what-the-buck tailgates, I spent 9 minutes on a treadmill. I felt like I'd run a marathon. My legs are still hurting, and it's not that bad until they start doing the incline part of it, and they want to get your heart rate up to 175. Then you start feeling it. But anyway,
no,
all went well.
I've had a stress test. You may find this hard to believe, but when you're as fat as I am, people think your heart doesn't work. And so I had a stress test quite a few years ago, and what's deceptive about me is that despite being big as fuck, I've played sports my whole life.
Right.
And these guys had me on this treadmill at like a 21-degree incline or something. They're like, I got to get your heart rate to this, I think it was 175, and they're fucking confused as hell. They're like, why is your heart rate not that high?
Yeah, well, I mean, that means you're in pretty good cardiovascular shape. I had a treadmill test done in 2004, and the doctor told me that I have the cardiovascular fitness of an 85-year-old woman. As soon as I looked at the treadmill, my heart rate went up. So, and it has not improved since 2004, so I'll just tell you that much. But,
well,
but it will, because... as you know, Derek, as we get older, and for all the listeners out there, first of all, when you're young, take care of yourself, because it's like a vehicle. You know what I mean? You ride it hard, and you just throw it in the garage, or you leave it outside. Eventually, it's going to start to rust, and that's what happens to us old guys. So hopefully people will heed the advice of this old man. And when the doctor tells you got high blood pressure 10 years ago, take care of your medication, start exercising, and eat right, because if not, it will catch up with you. So, but anyway... thankful that it went well today. I have a little slight enlargement still on one of the chambers, but doctor feels comfortable with continued exercise and medication that'll clear itself up. So that's the hope.
Well, I hope so, too, because I'd hate to see you not be around, though I think that what this means is you have to, as part of your exercise program, walk to the What the Buck tailgate. We just won't let you eat any of the barbecue.
I tell you what, do they still make those shoes that have those little mini rollers in the bottom of them? Maybe I could skate over there.
Yeah, take one,
know.
Take one from a kid. Nice.
Yeah. And I hope they light up too. That would be awesome.
The wheelies, as they call them. So we're sitting here with some of our closest friends. I've been attacking them because I'm in a bad mood, and I'm not really attacking them, but I'm really grumpy. I gave them the sort of mea culpa and expressed the fact that the last two seasons have taken the joy of football from my heart. And that talking about this team sometimes can be very frustrating, so I apologize in advance. We are talking all the speculation that we have to talk about. Offensive coordinator is first up. Fish came in and said that the answer is Cutter. He's going to be hired, and then I busted his balls for doing the internet thing where you just say something that's not a fact, but you say
right.
It like it is a fact.
Okay.
Do you have any inside information? Who's our next offensive coordinator? Has he already gotten an office? What's going on?
No, well, I can assure you that, contrary to popular reports, that there has been no official offers made to anybody. And I think there's still some people they would like to interview. You know, this is from some information I gathered. It's the word that I heard from the source who is the, you know, one of the main sources, isn't just some Joe on the street, said they're going to cast it. They kept using the term cast a wide net. So,
right.
You know, what that tells me is they're going to look at all different types of offenses. They're not going to go with strictly, you know, okay, we're strictly going to go with this style as opposed to this style. They're going to take a look and listen. Now, as Yuccaneers and I talked about yesterday, we talk to each other probably once a week. Jimmy Johnson on your side, he calls himself Yuccaneers on our boards. But
mm-hmm.
One of the things Yuccaneers came up with that made a lot of sense was, and I've heard teams doing this before, including when they were looking for Greg Schiano before they hired Greg Schiano, is at times, you know, teams will bring guys in to pick their brain. You know, what kind of team do we have? You know, where's the talent at? See what these guys say. They're certainly interviewing them in a sense, too, but they're also, you know, gathering some information, getting different outside opinions of what this football team needs. So, to me, I could be wrong. They could offer the position, and somebody could be hired tomorrow for all we know, but I really think it's going to be a little bit longer. Problem is if you're really interested in a couple of these guys you've already interviewed, there are some other teams out there looking for the same position, particularly Jacksonville, so you've got to be careful there. And certainly we know with the fired teams who are looking for new head coaches, they're going to be interviewing a lot of these same guys unless the Buccaneers get one locked up. So I think they would like to do it sooner rather than later. But at the same time, I think Lovie Smith is cognizant of the fact that this is a huge hire for him, and it needs to be the right hire. And they can't just rush and say, okay, this guy did this with Atlanta or this guy did this with San Francisco. They've got to have their first-round pick in mind, and from there, I think, is when they'll kind of develop, you know. Or who. And again, I think if you see a guy like Greg Roman hired, then, you know, then Marcus Mariota makes a little bit more sense. A cutter, you know, may signal, or a Trestman may signal that Jameis Winston is the guy. But I don't have any inside information, but I know that they're going to look at a lot of different angles, and I would suspect there's actually possibly even been some guys interviewed that we haven't had reported to us yet. I'll tell you, it's pretty tight-lipped around there right now about the offensive coordinator choice.
Well, and to be honest, I expect it to be tight-lipped in general. They can't afford to let this stuff slip out. I mentioned it, I called it the incestuous world of coaching. These guys are all, hell, the Shanahans are getting looks.
Yeah.
You know, it's astonishing that I'm not hearing, you know, Glanville, and they're not pulling it's not the annual discussion about when the jaw's coming back off.
Lehman Bennett is still available. He coached the Senior Bowl last year, so he's, I mean, not the Senior Bowl, the East-West Shrine Game, so he's still out there in case anybody's looking.
Lehman, the mighty Lehman Bennett. Very, very nice.
Yep.
So let's transition off of OC. The only one I've ruled out, by the way, is Marty Morningweed, because for some reason he must have kicked sand in my girlfriend's face or something when I was younger, because I really just don't care for Marty Morningweed.
No, I'm with you too. That would be my least favorite choice. I mean, there's a possibility. I mean, look, you know, Bill Callahan to me is a decent candidate when you start looking at what he was able to do with that offensive line in Dallas, and not just the offensive line of Dallas, but being part of that offense. You know, and Callahan, although Gruden kicked his butt in the Super Bowl, you know, the guy, I believe Oakland led the NFL in offense that year.
They did, but they were running Gruden's offense.
I agree with that. But
I'm just,
you know what?
I'm just kidding, dude.
There's a lot of people that wouldn't mind seeing John Gruden walking up and down the sidelines anymore, and I'll be honest with you. After the last three offensive coordinators, John Gruden looks like a genius. He really does, compared to what we've seen from this offense, the last three different coordinators, with, you know, going back to Olsen and then Sullivan and of course Arroyo last year. So, look, if somebody wants to bring Gruden's a hybrid of his offense to Tampa, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either.
Fucking spider wide banana and shit. So, very, very interesting stuff. Now let's talk quarterback. Now, I know this was near and dear to your heart. I've seen you all over Facebook talking about it. And Raul in the chat room actually asked a question that I haven't heard asked. There was a lot of speculation about whether Jameis was going to come out. There was some speculation he may come back. We saw Sean King tweet that a little birdie told him he wasn't coming back, and apparently the little birdie was full of shit.
Well, I'll tell you, let me defend Sean King a little bit. I had the same, not the same birdie, but a birdie that I talked to tonight, who I asked last night, and this person didn't respond back. And this person is so close to the team, I can't even begin to tell you how close. I mean, as close as you can be to a football team without being Jimbo Fisher. So you can figure it out from there. But this person, when I talked to him today after Jameis did make the announcement, then he said, if I would have answered you yesterday, I would have told you he's going to stay in Tallahassee. That's how confident that a lot of people were that he was going to. I don't know what happened between, you know, noon yesterday and 9 o'clock this morning, but something certainly happened where Jameis decided to go ahead and make this decision. It wouldn't surprise me, and I haven't heard this, and this is purely speculation, but it wouldn't surprise me if the administration encouraged Jameis to go ahead and declare. But I'll say this: I know for a fact that on Jimbo Fisher's football team, Jimbo tells these guys, if you're first or second rounder, go get your money. Because you know what? College credits don't go anywhere. They're there. You know, 20 years from now, if you want to go get your degree at Florida State, what you've done is still there. And then come back and do it when you got a pocket full of money, if college is that important to you. But if you're a first or second round guy, you've got to, and Jimbo encourages that, even though it tends to hurt his team. He understands the business of sports and the whole dynamics of it. So, but 24 hours ago, this person told me that they would have bet certainly that Jameis would have stayed in Tallahassee. But something has changed, and obviously he's coming out now.
So the question that made me go down that road was, Is there any possibility that Mariota doesn't come out?
You know, it's kind of slim. I haven't dug as deep as far as what he's done college-wise, but I believe he's already earned his degree and maybe doing some graduate work now. I can't imagine Marcus staying another year, to be honest. He could, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to get into his mind. I have zero connections, obviously, in Oregon. I barely have connections outside of Plant City, so you understand what I'm saying. To go halfway, well, not halfway, all the way across the country, I got no connections there. But,
the geography was messing you up there for a second, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, down South America where Oregon is, my contacts down there are no good at all. But next to them, my Canadian contacts in South America now, Canadians are very good.
Well,
You know, I think he comes out also. I think he does. Number one, he doesn't want to be a distraction to the football team. I don't think you know, they've got a huge game coming up next week, and you know, particularly if they win that football game, which I think they have a very good chance to do. I'm not sure what else the kid has left to accomplish, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and the chat room and the Googles have confirmed that he's actually got enough credits. He's graduated, so he's good to go. So, but it was still worth the question. So, in the scenario where both of them exist, they're both available. We have the first overall pick, and we haven't built some sort of an amazing Herschel Walker-arian, that's actually a free agency move, but RG3-ish move where we trade with Chip Kelly for 14,000 picks and 10 guys and a bunch of money and some wings. Who do you pick irrespective of your homerism?
You know, I don't like to say, because it doesn't matter what, you know, people who are anti-Winston are going to obviously accuse me of being a homer. And, you know, as I've tried to say to people, look, I'm more familiar with Jameis Winston because I've seen every pass he's thrown multiple times. You know, my wife constantly yells at me to get rid of some of these DVR games from last year. But I've seen, you know, everything from every spring game to the last pass he threw in the game against Oregon. And so what I'm saying is you know, if this guy checks out, then Jameis Winston would be my pick. I understand the concern. Again, the person that I spoke to that's close to the situation, you know, really, really 100% believes that you know, Jameis has got a bit of a bad rap. He's brought on some of these things himself. Look, I mean, you know, walking out of Publix with crab legs, screaming internet garbage, you know, in the school cafeteria, particularly disrespecting women in a sense by what he said when he's, you know, facing, you know, a code of conduct hearing or a potential lawsuit, all of these things, you know, just really silly things that this guy's done. You know, but if the Buccaneer organization does their homework, which they're going to do, I can assure you the Manziel investigation that teams did last year, the Jameis Winston one, if you compare the two, then the Manziel one is your basic background little league check. You know what I mean? Where you sign a form and mail it off. What they're going to do with Jameis Winston is going to be completely different, even more extensive than anything the team saw with Manziel. And you know, if he checks out, then I think he's the first choice. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Number one, whether I'm biased or people believe I'm biased or not, you know, he's to me the better professionally ready quarterback at the time being. Does Marcus Mariota possess skills that Jameis Winston has? Abso-freaking-lutely. No doubt about it. But some of those things that he does in college, he cannot do in the NFL because the NFL won't allow it. And you know, his running and his running plays and specifically, although, you know, he only ran the ball technically 8 times in that Rose Bowl game, but in the NFL, you know, quarterback design runs, I don't think you would see a lot of them from him, and that's one of his strengths. I love Mariota as a person, as a kid, you know, as a talent, I certainly do, but I'm just looking at it strictly from a football perspective. I don't think Lovie Smith is going to hire a spread or a read option type offense, and I think it would take a considerable amount of time for a guy like Marcus Mariota to really pick up playing in a pro-style offense. And I don't know that the Lovie Smith can afford that amount of time. You know what I mean? Is Mariota's ceiling higher? Possibly. But part of my thought process is, you know, Greg Schiano was fired, and a lot of people thought, well, he'll get a pass because he had a rookie quarterback in Mike Glenn last year. That didn't fly. I mean, he was gone. So you know, I think that Lovie Smith and the organization is looking at it like, you know, they need to bring somebody in, not necessarily to start day one, but who will be able to play and be somewhat effective in the NFL right away. And I just think Winston would do a better job and be a better fit there. But again, you know, there is the background part that has to be checked out. But, you know, I think a lot of it is overblown. I wish I could tell you more. Over beers one day, I'll give you the full scoop, but it's just nothing that I feel comfortable saying over the air or even writing about right now. But, is he a knucklehead? Absolutely, he's a knucklehead. But, you know, there's a lot of knuckleheads playing in the NFL at a high level. And honestly, maybe this team went to the extreme by getting rid of so many knuckleheads that, you know, they've got no edge, no attitude, no, you know, bad guy on the team anymore. And I don't want to say bad guy, you know what I mean. Just, you know, this team is void of a Warren Sapp type mentality, you know what I mean? And, you know, I think Jameis Winston brings a little bit of that to whichever team he ends up with. But Buccaneers, you know, will be, I think, fortunate to get an opportunity to draft either one of those guys. But if I'm picking, and I honestly believe the Buccaneers, if the background checks out, that it'll be Jameis Winston.
All right. Well, I actually agree, and we'll talk about that at length. I don't want to take up all of your time this evening, though, so I want to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about what you got going at Pewter Report. I know you guys had a number of articles coming out here. You guys did your end-of-the-year grades, that sort of stuff. What do you think are the most interesting folks that are folks here at What the Buck would want to hear from the Ginger Badass?
Well, you know, that's hard to say. Scott did a good job putting together some end-of-the-year stuff and kind of reviewing things and, you know, even assistant coach of the year kind of deal. You know, just kind of interesting stuff at the end of the year. Really, though, we're going to really be focused on, you know, the latest rumors or stories that are out there as far as the coaches, as far as Jameis declaring today, those kind of things. You know, something that we did immediately following the Rose Bowl was the Rose Bowl winner doesn't necessarily mean that's the Buccaneers draft pick. I mean, yes, Mariota won the Rose Bowl and he didn't commit any egregious errors like Jameis Winston did and statistically outperformed Jameis Winston. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it wasn't the Buccaneer quarterback bowl, in other words. I mean, both of the guys are possibilities, but it doesn't mean because Mariota won that he is automatically the pick. And that story's still up and still generating a ton of comments and a lot of controversy, too. A lot of people think that, you know, the Pewter Report is biased. You know, and I don't like that, Derek, and I'd like to take an opportunity to say this. Everybody knows I'm a Florida State fan, but Florida State's put almost 30 players in the NFL since I've been with Pewter Report, and I've never written about a single one of them. I never wrote about E.J. Manuel, the Buccaneers should draft him. I never wrote about LaMarcus Joyner, the Buccaneers should draft him. Kelvin Benjamin, the Buccaneers should draft him. You know, Vince Williams, you know, there's a ton of players that are playing in the NFL, Xavier Rhodes, things like that. You know, if I were a homer, I would be pimping, you know, Florida State players on a regular basis. And I dare anybody to go back and find where I've written about any specific Florida State Seminoles. But, you know, it is a little frustrating to hear that because this is my job and this is my career. And I'm going to go with who I honestly believe is the best pick for the Buccaneers. And I can assure you, if Jeff Driscoll was the best option, Fish, if you're listening, if Jeff Driscoll were the best option, then that's the guy that I would love to see the Buccaneers draft. Because once the college season is over, I have no loyalty to anybody. I could care less. I had a 25-minute conversation with Matt Patchen the other day, one of the best conversations I had in open locker room all year. And the guy's as Gator as he can be, even though he finished up at Boston College. And, you know, Solomon Patton's a good guy. I mean, I still have communication with Ahmad Black. I don't care about those things once the player leaves college, because then it's all about my job and my career. And it is frustrating for people to kind of question my integrity and say I'm judging a player solely because they played at a school that I cheer for. That's just not the case. And, you know, I think most Buccaneer fans or Pewter Report readers and your guys, you know, understand that and believe that. But there's a few people that aren't going to believe it no matter what, and that's okay. But overall, you know, I think Jameis is the guy. And you know, and Scott, you know, is believing that. Scott certainly has no allegiance to Florida State being a Kansas State grad. So, you know, Scott's going to have what I think is going to be a very, very, very controversial Fab Five coming out on Friday. He's already went over some different things with me about it, and I'm looking forward to reading it, but it'll certainly get the attention of a lot of Buccaneer fans.
Well, and Mark, I've known you forever, and I'm sorry that that's getting you down. I know that I'm in a down state, too. So it's one of our people in the chat room, Raul, who, like I said, I didn't recognize his name from the past. I apologize, Raul, if you've been with us for a while. But he's been very active tonight in the chat room, and I appreciate that. He says, it's the internet, my view, or I hate you. And I think that that is probably the best and most succinct way of putting the way the internet goes right now. So I think that, you know, you've got an avid group that knows that that's the case. And I was having this conversation the other night with someone totally unrelated about whether there's that pull-through, whether you're a Florida State guy, a UF guy, it doesn't matter where you're from. No one really gives a shit once they become a Buccaneer or a Panther or whatever.
Right.
Now they're a Buccaneer. I've said it repeatedly. I don't want to pick a quarterback. To be honest, the failure rate of top 15 quarterbacks over the last 30 years is so low. I don't want that lottery pick. Sorry. If I can trade that for a shit ton of other picks, I want to do it. That said, no matter which one we draft, and if we had to draft one right now, it would be Winston in my mind, and it's not close, by the way.
Right.
I'm still going to root for him. If Mariota becomes a quarterback, I wanted to be, I didn't want Josh Freeman. I ended up being very close to the Freemans, loving the kid, hating how it turned out, and cheering my ass off for every time he threw it. I put some stats in the stat room. I'm going to give you some stats, and I want to see if you know who I'm talking about. Over his career, 113 TDs to 15 interceptions, 4-4-4 on the 40. His sort of unmeasurables, he was a dual-threat quarterback, strong arm, great leader, great kid, good grades, MVP of the Shrine Game. Who am I talking about?
Can you give me a time frame reference?
In the last 10 years.
The Colin Klein. No, I don't have any idea.
Josh Johnson.
Yeah, there you go. Golly.
Josh Johnson, guys.
A little before my time, but you're right. Absolutely. And I say before my time, before Peter Report time. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you go back, and again, I'm not picking on Oregon or saying it's strictly just system, because, I mean, they're very talented athletes. Just because it's a great system, you and I are not going to put up the numbers Mariota did, right? I mean, you still have to, you know, complete the task and execute the offense, and he's a master at it. I think it was Herb Street after the game and even after the Alabama game when they were talking and doing some reviewing of the upcoming championship game said, you know, Mariota's a quiet assassin, and I thought that was a pretty good description of the guy. But you go back and look at some of the quarterbacks under Chip Kelly. I think the Dixon kid was another one that put up great numbers. But, again, you know, it doesn't mean he's not going to be a great NFL quarterback. I think he has the potential to be as good or better than Winston. I mean, it's certainly there, but it's going to be more of a specific system that he plays in that I think will allow him to excel more, if that makes sense. But,
well, one of the things I think that both of our fan bases should do, and I still don't know how to do this after this is our – we're completing 9 years. We'll be going to our 10th year. You guys have been doing Pewter Report since, I don't know, the dawn of time.
Back when everything was black and white.
Back when you used to chip it into stone. If we interviewed most of the folks on Twitter about what the spread offense is, how it works, what it's predicated on, these sorts of important concepts, if you're going to talk about a quarterback who comes from that system, and that's not to say that just because you're a system quarterback now doesn't mean you can't play in another system.
Right.
Cam Newton has proven that. Russell Wilson has proven that. Colin Kaepernick started to prove that. Right. Some of these guys, if they have some of those other intangibles around arm strength, around vision, right, they can progress, and I do believe, despite the NFL's best intentions to turn this into fucking flag football, there are still too many really good athletes out there for what we saw in the Rose Bowl, right, which were screen passes or bubble screens that went for a huge yardage, which forced the defense to take their few skilled guys and crowd the line and then let them play pitch and catch with some flies. That doesn't work in the NFL, and if you try and be a quote-unquote dual-threat quarterback in the NFL, it will last you about a season and a half before you go, fuck this, I would like to live to play another day.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it was funny, somebody in our message board said, they joke about Fat Freeman, right, the Fat Freeman that used to run before he lost his weight, and when he got in better shape, he didn't run nearly as much, and, you know, they say, well, you know, that's because the team cut his legs out from underneath him and didn't allow him to run. Josh didn't like to run. Number one, think about this, and you know this from playing and coaching football. When your quarterback is running, say your quarterback, and even a scramble, I mean, even Peyton, if Peyton Manning has to drop back and avoid a rush and runs for 20 yards and slides down, has to get back to the line of scrimmage again, is he capable of dropping back again in the very next play and trying to throw an 80-yard touchdown pass or a 40-yard, you know what I'm saying? They're not runners, you know what I mean? And running backs, you know, take breathers. Quarterbacks don't tap their helmet and say, I need to come out of the game. You know what I mean? And in the NFL, when you're going to take a tremendous amount of abuse, and those running lanes are going to be filled by disciplined defensive guys, you know, I think it changes things. I mean, it's an exciting offense, and there's going to be more guys equipped to run it because so many college teams run it. But, you know, really, you can take a look at a spread option or a spread offense, and you could even go back to the early days of the NFL when they're running the wing T,
wing
right?
T, yep.
Nobody's running the wing T anymore, right? Because defense coordinators were smart enough to stop it, and athletes got better and faster and stronger. You know, I love the surprise element of a read option type thing. Buccaneers, actually late, I can't remember which game it was, Josh was in the shotgun, handed off to Sims or Martin, and actually took off around the end like, you know, maybe he had the ball, which, mm-hmm. you know, I love that element occasionally doing that, you know what I mean, because it does keep a defense honest. And parts of that offense that I think can be successful in the NFL. We saw RG3 that first year as a rookie eat the Buccaneers up with that. They weren't disciplined in their assignments, and they weren't prepared. And Bill Sheridan got out-coached in that game by Shanahan, and RG3 looked like he was going to be a superstar. But teams caught up with things, and people say, well, he had a knee injury. But, you know, I think Kaepernick took a step back to a degree this year, and people say Russell Wilson spread offense or read option, whatever you want to call it. You know, they have elements of that because he's an athletic guy. But, you know, I think people forget sometimes Russell Wilson spent 4 years, you know, in a pro-style offense at NC State. And part of that was with O'Brien and Dana Bible, who are, you know, strictly pro-style offensive guys. I mean, now he was good enough in college to be able to run and then drop back and throw again. He was in tremendous physical shape, and he took a lot of shots. But it's not the same as the NFL. And one other thing that I tend to – you know, people say, well, Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees came from spread offenses. And that's true to a degree, but if you go back, and I went back and watched some of their college film, it's nothing like what Oregon was doing in that Rose Bowl. Hey, let's not use the 2 or the 3. I mean, they you know, there was some element of that in their game, but it was nowhere near what Oregon does in that specific scheme. And that's why I think Oregon really has a great chance of winning this game, because they've got the perfect guy running a system that is very, very complex to try and defend against. And, you know, Florida State defense was just not good enough that day to stop the Oregon attack. And I don't know that Ohio State's is going to be. It may be. I think it's going to be a really good football game, and I'll look forward to watching it. But if I had to pick a team, I would take Oregon. Nobody runs it more efficiently than they do. But, you know, you could bring Helfrich to the NFL tomorrow is the offense coordinator of the Buccaneers, although it's mind-boggling that people think a guy who gets a majority of his salary from Nike is going to turn, you know, leave college and come to the NFL to be an offense coordinator, not a lateral move, not a promotion, you know what I mean, a demotion in a sense. It's not going to happen. But, you know, he's got the perfect offense, and he's got the perfect guy running it right now, and that's why I think that team wins the national championship. But I don't see it being overly successful in the NFL. But again, I'll say this. There are things that you can do with Marcus Mariota that you would not be able to do with Jameis Winston. And you design your offense around a player's strengths. I believe that. But to radically change the offense and try and change the NFL by running Oregon's deal, you know, as great a numbers as Chip Kelly put up, and I believe they had the second-ranked offense in the NFL last year, they're at home with the 2-14 Buccaneers watching on TV.
Yeah, and while I think Chip does some innovative things, I just think that there are too many changes. I think conceptually his spacing, if you start studying Chip Kelly's offense, and I encourage everyone out there who has the time and inclination to do so, it's not just a spread. There's some serious
right.
math behind what Chip does and geometry about what Chip does with regards to spacing. Endpoints on routes, distance between endpoints. There is some serious shit that he's doing that's really cool.
Right.
Some of it is so fast-paced, and you don't have the roster size you have in college. You can't constantly rotate in fresh guys. It becomes a problem to play at that pace at this level. Now, does that mean you can't do it? No, it means we haven't seen it done successfully yet. And,
right. And
you know, a buddy of mine made the comment, and I think I mentioned on the show before, my buddy Bruce, who rarely tries to make, like, football insightful comments, but he loves the game. He said he wonders if the next revolution will be the team that goes away from a franchise quarterback and just gets three really good spread quarterbacks and says, you know what, so what, break the first one. I got two more.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'll say this. I wouldn't surprise me if a team tried that because, you know, the offensive guys are always trying to get ahead of them. And what can you do? You know what I mean? How long would that last? I don't know. But could it be successful for a while? Certainly. I remember we remember the Wildcats 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, that was going to revolutionize.
Yep, it changed the whole league.
You know, so, you know, it's just, you know, again, I'm not, you know, a Neanderthal that thinks players should go back to wearing, you know, leather helmets and run the ball 3 yards in a cloud of dust. But at the same time, I'm not one of these guys that sees the future of the NFL as a spread offense unless, as you mentioned earlier, they turn it into a flag football league. Then, absolutely, that offense works in the NFL.
Well, it's interesting. I don't want to. Way to go, Daffy Duck. I actually did have a point. I want to ask you about Rob Marinelli. I want to get into that one second, then let you go because I know it's late.
Well, I'm good, man. Since I couldn't make it in, I apologize. I messed up my schedule, so I can go as long as you need me to. It's not a problem.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. But I do want to ask about Rod. Now, Steve White, who I have an immense amount of respect for, essentially says that if there's a way under heaven and earth that this can happen, it's going to happen. I don't know whether he's got a little birdie or whether it's just his gut telling him. What is your gut telling you about Rod Marinelli? And if the gut is telling you that he's going to come here, what capacity and what does it do to Leslie Frazier?
You know, Scott and I talked about that. I don't think there's any way you get him here unless he is the defensive coordinator. I think you could see Leslie Frazier becoming, you know, an assistant head coach kind of a deal, a Butch Davis type role maybe with the Buccaneers, Jimmy Ray a few years ago with Shiano type deal. but I don't. Rod's not coming here. He's certainly not coming here to replace Joe Cullen, who's a very good friend of his, and I thought Joe did a good job with this defense, who, by the way, I believe finished with 35 sacks, one less sack than the Buccaneers Super Bowl team. I mean, they actually, when you add it all up, you know, but the problem was they went through spurts where they didn't come close to getting pressure on the quarterback, and sacks tend to come in bunches. But again, what I'm saying is, you know, Rod, if Rod comes, I think he would be named the you know, like an associate or assistant head coach, and he would certainly, most certainly, be the defensive coordinator because, you know, he's not going to again take a demotion in a sense just to come hang out with his buddy Lovie Smith, who I'll tell you right now, these guys are as close as any two coaches in the league are. Though I mean, they're very, very tight and very, very close, and you know, but my gut's telling me that the organization would love to have Rod and Marinelli be a part of it, and it just depends on you know what Rod wants to do because you know, and if this Dallas somehow goes on the road and wins this week and ends up in a championship game or even potentially the Super Bowl, you know, do you leave that? I don't know. You know what I mean? But it's hard to really get a gauge on what Rod wants to do, and honestly, you know, the Buccaneers can't do anything right now until, you know, Rod's season is over. They can't be tampering with any coaches or things like that. So, you know, until the Cowboys season ends, that's when things, I think, will start heating up, obviously, as far as talks between the two of them go. Rod could be using the Buccaneers as leverage to get a better deal with Dallas because I don't think Jerry Jones wants to let him go. And we know Jerry Jones has a printing press out back somewhere in Texas. So, money's not an issue with Jerry Jones. I mean, I could see him, you know, doubling Rod's salary to keep him, and do the Buccaneers match that? Do the Glazers sign off on that? I don't know.
Well, it's certainly got a lot of Bucs fans, I think, excited. Anyone who knows what Rod Marinelli can do is excited about the possibility. The guy's one of the best coaches in the league.
And Derek, let's go back to, you know, this team and the lack of fire on this team and the lack of, you know, an edge, a nasty edge. There's no nasty on this football team. Rod Marinelli brings that, you know what I mean? Joe Cullen brings that to a degree, but again, ultimately the defense is run by a pretty laid-back guy, pretty cool, calm, demeanor type guy in Leslie Frazier. You know, I think this defense could use the juice of a guy like Rod Marinelli, who is one of the biggest a-holes in the world, but every player that's ever played for him that I've ever talked to, there's not a wall they wouldn't run through for the guy. I mean, they absolutely love him because he gets results out of guys. He gets things out of guys that guys didn't know they were able to do. He's just really one of the best assistant coaches that's been in the NFL, I think, in the last 20 years.
Well, and to a man, if you ask the players, they'll say the same thing. So, would we be fortunate enough to have, because I don't think the defense, you know, the defense showed improvement. We were playing with guys who had their names in Sharpie on the back of their shirts by the end of the year, and they still continue to make improvements. I was actually very pleased with the trajectory. Are there things they need to improve? Absolutely. Are we going to lose some players? Absolutely. Do I think that the Buccaneers are going to make some moves and lose some money that they spent because the free agency decisions were bad? I bet your ass they will, right? There was a really good thing. I got to find the guy's Twitter handle to give him credit, but I don't know if you saw it last night. The guy that did the sheets on dead money versus contract, and then the other table with their PFF position rank versus their salary cap rank.
Right.
It's a really interesting top 10, right? That shows what percentage of your top 10 salaries are of your total salary, right? And then how much dead money is in their contracts. And so it allows you to sort of evaluate guys. And, you know, if you've got more dead money than you have in their contract, then it doesn't make sense to cut them. You're paying more to have them walk away. But it's a really interesting thing, and I'll tweet it out if you didn't see it last night. Some good data.
Yeah, I'd like to definitely take a look at that for sure, because I missed that.
But good stuff, and I think that the defense can be improved. And if you get another guy like Marinelli to come in here, it'd be tremendous. But on the offensive side of the ball, and I know that there are fans out there that are saying, we've got to have change. You've got to take your swing for your quarterback. And I think that's what the Bucs are going to eventually do, because I can't imagine any sort of amazing hops that would make a trade make sense.
This team can't afford to not draft a quarterback. And we've talked about this. You don't draft a position or let the fans dictate what you do as a general manager and then as a head coach. But you do if the ownership tells you to. And we know that, you know, it's one of the reasons that John Gruden is not here. Is because of the lack of development of a young quarterback. And although some people point to Bruce Gronkowski, who's amazingly still in the league. But,
Polish pistol. Don't say his name around Sean King. He will punch you in the throat.
But if I'm Sean King, I'm pissed too, because Sean King is a more talented quarterback than Bruce Gronkowski was, and King didn't last in the league nearly as long. So, I don't even remember what I was going to say about that. What was I going to say about that? What were we even talking about? Gosh, it's a terrible... Oh,
drafting quarterback.
As far as drafting a quarterback, you're right. I think they have to draft a quarterback, one of the two guys. They you know, I think it's time. And again, the salary cap, you know, the collective bargaining agreement in 2011 really helps guys out, because you're not committing Josh Freeman money to a quarterback. Now, that's a big chunk of change, don't get me wrong, but it's not the money that we saw prior to the 2011 CBA, and you take a look at a team like the Titans and Locker and Gabbert in Jacksonville and Ponder in Minnesota, you know, all first-round picks, and within 2 years, you know, the teams had essentially given up on them for the most part and decided to swing for bigger fences or do something differently. And so, you know, it's different when it's the number one overall pick. And I'll tell you this, Derek, I'm amazed. As bad as the Buccaneers have been in their history, it's been since 87 since they were the very worst team. You know what I mean? That's almost mind-boggling that somehow it's been since Vinny. I was 17. I'm 44 now. That's how long it's been since they had the number one draft pick. And, you know, it's kind of surprising that as much bad football as we've seen, you know, the Richard Williamson year and Ray Perkins after they did draft Vinny and Sam Weish and, you know, Raheem and Greg, and they never managed to get it till this year, which totally blows my mind, because that's the last thing I expected was the Lovie Smith team to finish 2-14.
Well, sadly, it is in fact what happened, and that's what we're dealing with in this offseason. Hopefully we'll make a hire on the OC that'll be exciting, and we can trudge through the time between now and the draft.
Can we just say that if they hired Mike Shula, it would be an improvement over Marcus Arroyo. And again, I'm not knocking Marcus, but this is a guy who was the OC of Southern Miss last year at this time, right? And he didn't sign up for this gig. And God, I hope he got one hell of a pay raise, but I have a feeling that he didn't. But, you know, I don't know that anybody that they interview, including Marty, would not be an upgrade over what they did last year. You and I have discussed it in length in private about, you know, the concept of some of the scheme and things they were trying to do and the lack of any kind of rhythm and things like that. And Marcus Arroyo may end up being a really good play caller in the NFL one day or in college or wherever he ends up down the road. But last year was probably as poor of offensive game planning as I've seen in a long time.
Well, I'll tell you what, I actually said the very same thing that you just did, which was, you know, any of these guys would be an upgrade. And again, it's not attacking Marcus.
No.
It's just he's not ready yet, and maybe he will be at some point. But hopefully it's brighter days ahead for the Bucks. I know that gives the fans something to be excited about. There's all sorts of mock-ups of Mariota in a Bucks jersey and Jameis in a Bucks jersey, and it's got people fired up about football, which is nice. There's all sorts of hyperbole about how bad we are and how, you know, it's funny. The thing that has died down a little bit is that Lovie's defense, the league has passed it by, considering two other teams in the playoffs are running a defense very similar.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing how that stuff all disappeared and the people who were blowing that trumpet are no longer blowing it.
But you know what? And here's the importance of coaching to me, Derek. If you look at Dallas specifically, who probably had more talent on that football team last year, but it was Monty Kiffin running it instead of Ron Marinelli. Now, you know, again, Dallas' defense isn't the best in the league by any stretch,
but
it's a very effective defense, and I think he's doing a lot more with less talent than he had last year. But he's got some guys that kind of fit his scheme a little bit more than Monty had last year. But, again, sometimes just a new blood, you know what I mean, a little bit younger guy, you know, a guy with a little more fire and passion, you know, can make a difference on a football team. And I'll say this, I think if Rod Marinelli was the defensive coordinator last year, I don't think you see Michael Johnson in the last four or five games. I could see an Anthony Collins type healthy scratch situation. By the way, what's your opinion of DeMar Dotson and his potential success if they put him at left tackle next year? What's your assessment of Dotson and his game?
I'm going to go watch more film on him because I've never been overly impressed with him. I know he's been the poster child for the overachiever. He sort of looks the part and doesn't do horribly. And he was, you know, if you compare him to the True Blood era, he's certainly an improvement from that. He's got better feet, and it's probably from his basketball. He has a basketball background, if I recall.
Oh, yeah.
The problem I have is I want to go look at film. I want to see how well he holds up to strength. I actually am just disgusted with the way our offensive line was coached. Leverage was bad. Positioning was bad. Fundamentals were bad. Everything about what they did was bad. These men.
Let me interrupt you there on that part of it. And I agree. I'm not going to say I don't agree with you here. I'll just tell you, we had a prominent starter on the offensive line after the season tell us off the record that George Warhop was not the problem. Now,
and who the hell is?
From my untrained eye, I think it is. But a lot of these guys raved about George Warhop and things like that. And so,
well, they raved about each other too, and they all played like dog shit.
I'm just, I'll let people take it for what it's worth. I mean, I still don't know what to make of it. I'm just telling you, I can 100% guarantee you a starter on that offensive line said that specifically when the season was over. I think there's no way the guy survives, even if he is a good coach, because someone's got to fall on that sword on that offensive staff, and it's not going to be Spencer at running back because he was with Lovie in Chicago. How do you fire Andrew Hayes-Stoker, who, you know, helps a rookie receiver get over 1,000 yards, two 1,000-yard receivers, first time in Buccaneer history, so he's safe. And Arroyo probably goes back to the quarterback coach position. John Embry at tight ends, again, that's a guy that potentially could be in trouble, but was also part of the offensive game planning staff also last year, so that may hurt him or may help him. I don't know which way Lovie's going to look at it there, but I think, I mean, there's going to have to be some changes made, and I'll tell you, a lot of people were really pissed the Buccaneers declined the Senior Bowl invite to coach, but I can assure you that part of that reason is because they're looking at some other changes on the staff. I mean, you can go to Mobile without an offense coordinator and be okay. You can't go if you're trying to fill two or three other positions, and there could be some defensive that also let go. So, to me, that tells me that there's going to be some changes on the staff, not just hiring a new offensive coordinator.
Well, and I think that and what sucks is I did not study enough to know these guys well other than what they were doing. But like with names and such like that, it's a challenge. But Arroyo, I don't know how you retain him at quarterbacks coach. How you demote him back? I
think he would be okay with that. I think he would want to do that, and I think that he wasn't able to be a quarterback coach. I mean, he was pulling double duty and doing a job that was over his head. And I think Lovie may look at it as like, you know, we really put this guy in a bad position, and he deserves another year to see what he can do as a defense. But you remember, though, he was Tedford's guy, though, so he may also be like that.
And typically you see coordinators come with their quarterback coach because it's a
right.
I see that as a duality there, a pair, whatever. There's a word that's better than those things. But
yeah.
But I think he'll be a casualty. Tight ends were just garbage this year, but I don't know whether that was because they were poorly coached or whatever. No one bothered to teach anyone how to block other than Luke Stocker, who already knew how to block.
But I'll tell you this. You know what? I get so fired up when we talk about the tight ends. Not only they didn't perform well, but I don't know how often they were asked to perform well other than to be another extension running game. I mean, you're talking about Brandon Myers, who I'm not in love with the guy by any stretch, but here's the guy who caught over 80 balls 2 years ago in Oakland, right, in 2012. Mm-hmm. Guy that caught over 50 balls for the Giants. I mean, here's the guy that could have been an outlet for any of these quarterbacks, and they did not utilize the tight end. And we saw tight ends eat up the Buccaneers all year long, right?
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be a Jimmy Graham tight end get 40 yards down the field. It could be a 5-yard button hook. It could be a safety valve kind of deal. It could be play action, using them down in the red zone. And we just didn't see that at all this year. And I blame a lot of that on the scheme. I have a hard time, you know, blaming it on the tight ends themselves as opposed to more of the scheme. I don't think they gave them an opportunity to see what they could do, to be honest with you.
Well, and that may well be the case from a schematics perspective. I don't disagree. I do know that the offensive line was bad enough that tight ends were often kept in. When they were in, and we can look at Jimmy's data to find out how many times we ran in different formations to get to the answer. Like we talked about this before you came online, I talked about the discussion of anecdotal information and data, and we can go get that data. In fact, we were joking during the last game. I don't know how much you follow Twitter during the game. I know you tweet sometimes, but Steve had just released his article on chip blocking, which we've been banging the drum about for like, I don't know, 7 of our 9 seasons. What the fuck happened to the chip block? Why don't we coach our backs to chip? And there was a chip block, one, in the last game of the year. And it was a bad chip attempt, but it still existed. But these fundamentals of football, when you have a bad offensive line, that's like, why did we never design, why did we never move the pocket, right? Why did we never, we let our quarterbacks, both of them, Glennon and McCown, get to the point where they were hearing footsteps. So whoever this vet was who told you that it wasn't the coach's fault, when it becomes the entire grouping, right, the offensive line failure, because that's what it was. It was a total failure of the offensive line. There's only one throat left to choke, and that's the coach.
Well, I agree to a degree. Again, scheme makes a huge difference in that too, because when you look at the offensive linemen individually, when you look at Evan Dietrich Smith, there were terrible games that he had, but there were also pretty good games that he had. There was the Chicago game was particularly bad for Logan Mankins. But it'll get graded out pretty well, especially for a guy who, you know, played injured all year. And if people don't know that, Logan was never healthy. I mean, he got hurt in the first quarter of the first game. And you talk about whether you like him or not or think he makes too much money and all of that. You know, the guy battled his ass off for a guy that left a team that potentially is going to win the Super Bowl this year to go play for a 2-14 team. And he never... he never missed practice, never pulled the old, I need to sit out today, coach, because I'm a veteran Pro Bowler kind of guy, and was a great, great guy in that locker room. And I know a lot of people find that hard to believe and think he was just going through the motions, but he wasn't. And a guy like DeMar Dotson, I thought, played well, although he led the entire NFL in penalties at 14. But as far as when you look at him individually one-on-one, I think they were hurt, number one, by the constant rotation of offensive guys, and Dotson in particular, because at times this year it was Josh Allen, Garrett Gilkey, or Patrick Amame lined up next to the guy. And I talked to DeMar about that specifically, and he's never going to throw his guys under the bus, but you could tell it was hard. And it was hard for Donald Penn last year when they were revolving the guard, you know, had the revolving guard situation when Knicks couldn't play after the first couple games. God, I don't remember if that was last year, year before. I'm getting old, but you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
I mean, there was Gabe Kareemi in there at times, and then there was Ted Larson, and then there was Utah, and then you know whoever else they had that week was in there. And you know from being an offensive line coach and probably playing it at points in your life, and I've said it before, and it's so cliche, but it's so true that there's not a unit on a football team, in my opinion, and maybe people disagree that. It doesn't need to be more cohesive than those five guys up front and knowing what each other does and trusting the guy beside you because, you know, if the guy beside you doesn't do his job, he can make you look real bad in a hurry, in other words. So, you know, when you look at the players individually, you know, it's not – I don't – I how can you say it's not bad when they gave up 52 sacks this year? But it was bad. But there were you know, I would say Dotson, Mankins, and Evan Dietrich Smith had decent years this year, if nothing else. And the reason I asked you about your opinion of Dotson is because I really got hammered with a story I wrote about DeMar Dotson, you know, moving over to left tackle, which he absolutely will. And if he can perform at a good level, he doesn't have to be, you know, Joe Thomas or Anthony Munoz, whoever. If he can be an average left tackle, then that gives the Buccaneers one less thing to have to worry about in free agency and also in the NFL draft. And there's just 8 picks right now. There's not enough to fill all the holes on this team. And as we know, free agency is a crapshoot too. So, you know, by putting Dotson at the left side and allowing him to play there, and if he can do an average job, I think it just gives the Buccaneers more flexibility in what they can do in the offseason. And I'll say this, at $1.75 million, the guy was an absolute steal at right tackle, whether you liked him or not, when you look at salaries of other right tackles. And, oh, no, he was a good value last year, but if you move him to left tackle,
stupid.
It's $1.75 this year and $1.5 the following year. You know, I would expect, you know, he would certainly get a raise if he earns that job. And he'll have to earn it. I don't think they're going to give it to him. I think that's the one thing that this staff and this front office has learned. I think they handed too many guys jobs, and I think that there's going to be more competition at every position this year than there was last year.
Well, and there should be. It will be good. It will be good to see that. Offensive line is just one of those things. You know, Calico Jack in the chat room while we were talking just mentioned the EDS said it was like having a box of parts and a picture of what it's supposed to look like, but no instructions of how to get there. And I think it's an interesting way to describe it. What I don't understand is fundamentally the things the offensive line did poorly, and that's why I blame the coach. There were just basic things that weren't done well. And the guy's probably a heck of a smart guy, and all these guys know more than I do. I get all that, all the normal caveats. But shit, when you are just that poor the entire season, someone's ass has got to be on the line for it. But anyway,
no, I agree.
This was Mark Cook from PewterReport.com, editor-in-chief. Obviously, get them at PewterReport.com. Make sure you become an insider for the $4.73 for your lifetime.
Actually,
or whatever it costs.
No such thing anymore. It's all free, man. And that's
no
something
way.
We want to really stress
no
this year.
No way. Is it all there free? Is, you guys made the move.
We made the move. We joined the 21st century. There's no insider at all. And you know, people still get mad when we say there's a chat on Friday. They're like, well, can't participate. But that's not true. It used to be insider only. But it is wide open for anybody to participate. And, you know, if you want to post on the message boards or comments, you have to register, but it doesn't cost you anything, and we don't sell your information or anything like that. It's a real simple sign-up process. And, you know, pick your username and your password, and you're good to go. And I tell you what, you know, this is, you know, the message boards, and again, people joke about message boards. That's AOL 1999, but they're huge, man. It's just a great outlet for a discussion, you know what I mean, a written discussion. You have this great podcast, and people are chiming in the chat room and things like that, and Joe Buck Fan has their comment section where people go back and forth. There may be 70 or 80 comments on a story thing. You know, we've got the comment section, but we've also got the message boards where, you know, if people have their own specific idea, you know, or question or topic they want to discuss, they can do so. So we hope people check it out. There's no insider. It's all free now, and we hope people will certainly check it out and join up. And again, when I say join up, it won't cost you anything anymore.
Well, Jimmy Johnson, a.k.a. Yuccaneers, wants to know if he gets his $1.83 prorated refund. Anyway.
You tell Jimmy Johnson with as much scoop as I give this guy from time to time. I think he's got his $1.83. And by the way, full disclosure, Jimmy Johnson was the guy who brought up the Bill Callahan situation, so I give him full credit for that. Very, very, very smart guy. And what I love about Yuccaneers is he doesn't always agree with me, you know what I mean? We're cyber friends, but sometimes when you become friends with somebody via the internet and you're in this type of position, they follow you like sheep, and they'll be like, yep, whatever Mark Cook or Scott Reynolds or Derek Fournier says is the gospel truth, or Roy Cummings or Rick Stroud. Not Jimmy Johnson now, I'll tell you that right now. He'll give it back to you and usually back it up with some decent facts.
Well, I like that about him, too. I would love some of those sheep, though. If you have any of those, you can send them over this way, because most people just think I'm full of shit.
You've got them. One of them is named Skip. One of them is named
Skip is all over you, man. Skip is all over you. Right
I don't
now,
know,
Skip.
Man. He used to be my best friend, and now I don't know. Every time I see pictures of, of what the Buck gets together. He's in the front row, man.
Well, that's because we do get-togethers, because we know the people who participate with us, unlike
you actually have get-togethers. Yes, that tends to help to have people show up. I agree with you there.
It does. All right, my
friend. We're going to plan on doing some stuff this year. We were overwhelmed, and I don't think any of us understood the complexity and the time involved in designing a new website and working out the bugs. Last year was just a terrible, terrible, tough year for us, and then you combine it with a 2-14 football season. And people, I say this, our traffic is excellent to start the year. We ended up beating last year, the year before's traffic last year. But by the end of the year, things tailed off because, as you know, and as you felt, there's a point where they get tired of bitching or they get tired of cheering and they just become apathetic, and that's the worst thing for fans of an organization. But that's the good thing about the NFL. Every year you get to start over and try again, and there's always optimism. Right now, the Buccaneers are tied for home field advantage throughout the playoffs in 2015.
Suck it, everybody!
That's right.
No, if you want an example of parody, just look at the way we played the Panthers in Carolina. Yes, it was against Derek Anderson, but anyone who watches the Panthers knows the drop-off Cam Newton to Derek Anderson isn't nearly as pronounced as people want you to believe.
Right.
The parody in the NFL is just astonishing to me. The difference between the top team in the league and the bottom is just amazing. But at any rate, Mark, I'm going to wrap this up because I'm done talking.
You're tired of me. Okay.
And no, I'm not tired of you. I'm tired of speculation. And I got to give Skip a lot of credit. Skip gets a lot of shit on this podcast.
Four more months of it. I mean, this draft doesn't happen until April 30th.
You're killing me.
I might have to sign off the message board for the next 4 months because it raises this blood pressure that I'm trying to control.
If I have to hear one more time the same discussion about system quarterback versus upside, yeah, but he's an immature asshole off the field, blah, blah, blah. Jesus Christ, how many times can we say the same six data points?
Go to Peter Report's Red Board right now. There's probably 15 open threads that have 500 comments about specifically what you just said. You know, we can't combine them all into one thread. It has to be 15 different ones. But and it's not going to slow down. If anything, it's going to increase. So that's why we encourage people to go to peterreport.com, sign up, become a member, and participate in our message boards.
Outstanding. One thing I do want to tell you about, Mark, you should talk to Scott and the team. We're going to have our first golf tournament, May 1st.
Yes.
So we'd love to talk to you guys about joining up in some form or fashion. I know you guys are usually looking for sponsors. We may want you guys to sponsor, though. So you guys may need to start having car washes or something.
Well, I was going to say we don't have any money, especially when they double my salary this year. So.
Oh, well, nice. Well done.
Yeah, so I guess
maybe a nice Pewter Report sponsored game in the luxury box, something like that. Who knows?
How about we give you some old logo Pewter Report T-shirts?
You're such an asshole.
I've got a trunk full of them, man. But anyway, we'll get those given out eventually. We'll finally they'll be antiques, but you might find them at your local Goodwill if I can't get rid of them soon. But no, I saw your thing on that. That's a great thing you're doing. Pewter Report has done golf tournaments in the past, and whoever's handling it and doing it all. It is a shiite ton of work to be PG-13. It is a lot of work to get the sponsors, finding the place, and it's not easy. But hats off to you guys for that. And I'll definitely, if not anything else, come play. I saw your comment the other day. Don't just like the page, damn it. You know, sign up for it. Blah blah blah. And I didn't because at the time I was still waiting on these test results, and I didn't know where it was going to be or how it was going to be because
sure.
I was on. You know, I couldn't even play golf, you know, from October till I had this stress test. Doc didn't want me doing anything. So I'm good to go. I got no physical restrictions. So, and I've got three buddies, and we'll work on at least getting a foursome over there at the very least. But yeah, we'll talk off the phone one day and try and figure out how we can do to help you guys out. Because, again, that's one of the things I've said that we respect you guys about so much is the giving back to the community and the money that you raise and the awareness that you give to certain causes that, you know, I wish we had the time and the energy and really the willpower to do some of the things you guys do, and the Golf Week tournament is another great example of that.
Well, we'd love to have you come in any capacity, and looking forward to it. Maybe we can get a little grudge match going, get you guys again. We get all the local media guys. If you guys can help us out on the media side, you guys can get
good
some foursomes
idea.
And see who can – we can have a little sub-tournament within the tournament. So,
yeah, hopefully that May 1st is not a mini camp or an OTA.
It's draft, baby. Days. It is draft. It is in the middle of the draft.
Wait a second. It is. You're right.
Oh,
how
I know.
How am I going to do that?
Because you're going to have to sack up and just do it. That's how.
You mean I'm going to play golf all day and go sit at One Buccaneer Place for 8 hours and write? Yeah, okay.
That's exactly what I expect.
This is starting to turn into me walking to the What the Buck tailgate. It's probably not going to happen.
God, what a vagina.
I'm an old man.
Oh, my Lord.
What time? Is that a Friday or Saturday?
It's a Friday.
That's Friday.
Friday, 1 o'clock shotgun.
Oh, boy, that's tough, but I will do my damnedest. At least it's in Tampa somewhere, right?
It is at the MacDill base. It's the water course.
Okay, well, that's good. I should be able to do that, and I could probably get Roy or some of the other guys to join in also. I'll definitely spread the word.
Well, I appreciate it. We're building a media committee. Maybe I'll tap you for the committee, see if you want to help us out. We got some guys doing that. But I'll talk to you offline, not bore these guys about it. Mark, thanks for calling in. Get some dinner. Have some fun. Congratulations on your test pass. I'll talk to you on the other side.
All right, man. Thanks, guys.
See you. Mark Cook, PewterReport.com. I know we went on a long time, but by God, I thought you guys wanted to talk about that sort of stuff. I see we got some folks hanging out here. Hans Steininger, I don't give you enough credit. So you guys hear us talk about the only Hall of Fame tailgate in Tampa. Hans is the one who started the tailgating Hall of Fame, and we wouldn't be in the tailgate Hall of Fame if it weren't for Hans coming down and vetting out what we do. So big shout out to Hans if he's still in there and not just a phantom, because sometimes he goes and I think plays a Sporkle or something when we're boring him with Buccaneer talk. But he had made a mention earlier about Mariota or Jameis Winston's off-field shenanigans and whether he was concerned about that. And we did a poll, and I think I had that data here. Only 17 responses, which is pathetic, but that's okay. 10 of you think that his off-the-field stuff is enough to really be concerning. I am not in that group. I don't give a shit about it. But we can talk about that more on the next What the Buck. Which should be next Wednesday. We will have we'll line up some guests. We're going to do some different things in this offseason, maybe some film work again. We've got to figure out a way to do that effectively. But thanks for staying with us. A reminder, a shout-out to the people we like BucksBrief.com. Fish is still, I think he's still in here. Fish is still here. Make sure you subscribe. Him and Adam doing a great job. Some great content out there, and obviously PewterReport.com. Thanks to everyone on the team. My crew, we'll see you guys on Sunday as we get ready and plan. For this offseason that never exists, and continue to do our charity work. Until then, for everyone in What the Buck, I am old school, and I will be getting out of here as soon as I can find our bumper music, which really isn't outro music because it talks about the intro, but I don't have outro music because we are a bunch of hacks. So until next season, we will continue to be hacks.
So I give zero.